If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder. This episode of Weird Things is brought to you by Scam School Book 1, available right now. Folks, it's the compilation of over 80 tricks from the popular web series Scam School, starring Weird Things host Brian Brushwood. The material is from over 200 episodes. There's audio commentary on every trick, over 35 video demonstrations, and it's laid out beautifully. It's absolutely the future of instructional ebooks. You need to see it to believe it. Get all the information at scamschoolbook.com. And by Andrew Maine's Angel Killer, the brand new thriller novella available for only a dollar. In front of security cameras, a tourist vanishes from the top of the Empire State Building and mysteriously falls to her death moments later in Times Square. A young girl dies crawling out of her own grave after having been declared dead a year earlier. On Fort Lauderdale Beach, a missing World War II airman and his aircraft show up as if he only died hours before. They call the mysterious man behind these unnatural events the Warlock. To some, he's a messenger of a modern age of miracles. But to Jessica Blackwood, FBI agent and daughter of a legendary magic family, the Warlock is a trickster and a murderer, and she's the only one who can see through his deceptions. Angel Killer is available now on Amazon for only 99 cents. Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another exciting edition of Weird Things, the podcast. I'm Andrew Maine, joined by Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Hi, everybody. 3 weeks in a row.
Mr. Brian Brushwood.
I will never miss an episode of this show ever. And if I ever do, play this moment and call me a liar, and then I'll show up and slit your throat.
There, well, for our new listeners out there, he does not speak on behalf of the rest of the people on this show.
No, I'm speaking to you specifically, new listener, who's only hearing my voice for the first time, maybe a little bit intimidated. I'm going to cut your throat.
You hear me, Josh? I'm going to cut your throat.
Oh, my God. One guy, Josh, is freaking out right now.
Who lives in South Florida, Palm Beach Gardens. Just graduated, made a film. We're talking to you.
We got to get this guy listening to the show.
Let's start off with the story here. We're going to play a little bit of a guessing game, okay?
Okay.
Right? I found the story shortly before we began, and I'm going to do one of these. I'm going to leave out essential bits of information.
That's unlike you. I can imagine no way this will go bad.
Okay, it's about three Arizona girls, and there's a photo of the three girls. They're not unattractive at all. They range in ages.
That's so how Andrew Maine would describe them.
What's that?
That's so how Andrew Maine would describe them. They have bilateral symmetry. They're not unattractive. They appear to be missing no limbs.
In the main rubric, they have rated in the 74th percentile.
The other two are nice looking, but there was a sort of a one of them's actually a beauty queen, and you can tell which one. And so that's the thing, is that I started to go like, oh, I'm like, oh, she's – and then I'm like, she's probably a very good listener.
She's got a great sense of humor.
Great smile.
Are you guys hungry? Because I'm going to go to Krispy Kreme. You want me to pick it? I know what you want, but what did you other two? What do you want?
Everything. So Brynn, Tess, and Savannah from Phoenix are black belts in karate, expert horseback riders, and avid musical theater fans. And something, something, something. We're just normal girls.
Charlie's Angels?
Extraordinary.
Who are these women?
God, Brynn said. And blankety blankety blank. Brynn, 17, the leader of the pack.
Sergey Brynn.
She's the one the others call the enforcer. She's homeschooled and a regular at the beauty pageant circuit. Savannah, 20, is the compassionate one, a college student who likes to shop. Finally, there's Tess, the middleman, because the others say the 17-year-old can play both good cop, good and bad cop, sorry. She also performs in local musicals. So they're homeschooled.
Nothing wrong with that.
They their father's a preacher.
Nothing wrong this with that. Tenderites.
What's that?
I think I got this one. I drilled in.
You know what the missing link is?
Care to guess what they do?
Wait, do they do a crime or help me out here? What was it? They find themselves in a situation.
They get involved in situations.
I think that they have a odd job that it would be kind of a hobby slash job, and I think it is very physically active, and I think it is on some levels controversial.
That's kind of a broad target for anything worth talking about.
All right, no, I mean, first of all, I agree with everything my advisor has just said.
I have a guess, and I don't want to guess.
Well, yeah, you feel like the moment you say it, I'm going to be like, this is so obviously right. But you see, I don't even know what they did. I know that one's a talker, one's a thinker, and something about horses.
Well, all right, no,
now,
this
is
a bio.
They're currently getting offers for a reality television show.
They're getting offers.
Okay. So here's the deal. This is a bio that are being written about these girls because now they're getting attention from TV people. But so they're highlighting everything that would be not like their job. Like, I think what these girls do, and I have not read this in case I'm right. If I'm wrong, then this is really going to be hilarious that I'm so confident. I think these girls enforce the Arizona border with Mexico.
Are you serious?
And keep an eye on to see if people are crossing over the border and try to apprehend.
Okay,
border jumpers.
Give me the details on them again. You said one's a beauty queen.
One's a beauty queen. They're all expert horseback riders and avid musical theater fans. They're homeschooled. They see themselves as being very inspired by God. They're not the face of what you would normally associate with this.
No, yeah, no. They're atheist hunters. They ride by moonlight and slaughter the godless.
Exactly. Checking people's web browsers for Rebecca Watson articles.
Exactly. You're like, skeptic, what? Slice your neck. Enjoy hell.
Because you've just incurred the wrath of the beauty queen and her 2-5 friends.
All right.
How far off are we? Who's closer? Me with the atheist hunters or Justin with Border Patrol?
You know, there might be somewhere in between kind of thing. Each of you has touched upon part of it in a way.
Wow, that's good. That's good that the two of us straddled.
It's one of these things where it's like, I kind of just want to tell you what it is, but it's kind of like, I'm kind of curious to see if I give you clues on that, where we go from there.
So this means we got to team up because separately we failed. So Justin and I,
either of us are dead on.
Neither of us.
I am not correct in the fact that they are particularly patrolling the border of Arizona and Mexico and looking for people trying to get into the United States illegally. And Brian's not correct when he says that they're a vigilante group of murderers slicing the necks of people who don't believe in God.
Yes. So let's meet in the middle.
But if I said that there is an element in both of what you say to this.
Are they? Okay, so wait. All right. Are they?
Oh, wait. I know what this is. They are going to be the new pilot with the popular lead-in of the Mythbusters, where they're Godbusters or
throat slicers.
Yeah, they're atheist slicers. I think that they're going to go. Well, I don't know though. Where were you heading with yours, Justin?
I think maybe border missionaries. If there's a religious element of it, maybe they're on the border trying to Well, because, I don't know. I couldn't see them, like, being coyotes, like, trying to get people over
the border. Maybe what they do is they ride into town with, like, a whole bunch of Zimas and Bud Light Limes, and then they like, have a party, and then right when they're about to seal the deal, they're like, but I need you to accept God.
All right, I'm going to read a quote from one of them to kind of narrow it down for you.
Okay, hold on, wait.
They're border savers. That's the name of the show.
Brian, what if all they do is every day
they set up like a living beer commercial where a dude's trying to get over the border from Mexico. He sees a Bud Light in the sand and he opens it up. And as he opens it up, three Arizona co-eds come out and start partying with them. And they're like, by the way,
start
you're
snowing.
Under arrest.
Go back to Mexico. Yes. By the way, right, except God.
Bren, the leader, there's a war going on every day being waged against us. Something, something, something. We know how the enemy is. We know what he's attacking, and we can fight back.
They are riding around trying to stop evolution. Like, not the belief in
Why
evolution.
Why are you so drilled in on this religion thing?
I guarantee you this is fundamental. This is fundamentalist to the conversation.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm sure that there's a religious element to it. Number one, they're homeschooled.
Number one, they go around. They don't try to stop the belief in evolution. They try to stop evolution itself. Like, as soon as they see a mutation, they slaughter those animals so that they won't reproduce and add biogenetic diversity to the gene pool.
All right, Andrew, can you give us another hint? I feel like we're close. Like, we're stepping all over it, but we're too blind to see.
Another quote. We're not proud of ourselves. We're humble. We're still learning. Let's see. They do a service, we'll say, and money's involved. Because, you know, they have to fund what they do.
Are they hunting for drugs? Like, is it like a drug trade thing?
I don't believe so. I think...
Are they the narco girls? Stop! It's the narco girls! Set them up, ladies!
You guys ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm gonna go ahead and place a $5 bet that I'm closer with my guess than Justin's narco girls.
None of your ideas have been anything less than they're a band of marauding murderers.
Yeah. You ready? They patrol the border, keeping out demons from our souls, the border between hell and here. They perform exorcisms.
Oh, no!
The border between reality and the immortal realms. Yes!
Headline, Teen Girl Exorcism Squad.
Wow!
So apparently, Bren said, after seeing an actual exorcism person led by us, you will walk away with no doubt whatsoever. There's a war going on every day. Satan hates us.
Satan, of course, is their
Bob Larson. I don't know if it's the same controversial Bob Larson, but, you know, goes on. He performs the exorcisms. When a demon comes into someone, it's going to bring as many of its kind with it as possible that can because it desires to steal, kill, and destroy. And he says that 50% of the population has demons in them. And if you're watching this show, guess what? All three of us.
Dude, Brian was so much closer than me. I thought that you were just completely on Mars, and you totally beat me.
Yeah.
How are you more in tune with the war between heaven and hell?
Let me tell you, I dated a lot of beauty queens that were self-taught at home.
In exorcism?
In exorcism. It was a...
Dude, imagine how many times that you would hear that, and how few times their next thought would be, oh, an exorcism?
Yes.
Like, oh, yeah, she's a beauty queen. She's self-taught. Oh, really? Yeah.
So they're looking for a reality television show, and I'm thinking, like, you know, the Christian Broadcasting Channel, and that's what they're going right now. It's like, man, we need our own Buffy.
Yeah, sure. Man.
Dude, are you kidding? They would have this and Swamp People. This could be on Nat Geo tomorrow. Teen girls running around. Hey, Pablo, looks like you got a little Mephistopheles in your soul. Let's yell at you for 30 minutes. Can they do it? I don't know. It's up to the Teen Girl Exorcism Squad.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what. We don't make a habit out of pandering to the chat realm, but they found that in about 2 seconds. Like, just hearing the premise instantly. Look at those girls, though. They do look like they've got dark secrets that will... They could shoot lasers out of their eyes the moment you...
No, there's the super cute one in the middle.
Yeah, and you get my, you know, my trying to be polite about. So,
wow,
I'm
way
just
to move
say
on.
Baby Blue on the end's a truck. I don't care what kind of demon you are. She's got a linebacker shoulder.
There's a documentary coming out with the Catholic Church's official exorcist performing exorcisms. Meanwhile, in Canada apparently seems to be a hotbed of Satan infecting people.
No.
A Satan infection, that's the clinical term for having a demon in you. Apparently, right now, a case of what's being called possible demonic possession in Saskatoon has prompted local church officials to consider the need for an exorcist. Church officials were called to a home by a woman who said her uncle showed signs of being possessed. Okay, at the home, the priest encountered a shirtless middle-aged man slouched on a couch. Wait for it. I know you're like thinking that's all of Canada.
Sure.
Holding his head in his hands. The man had used a sharp instrument to carve the word hell on his chest. And then when the priest entered the room, the man spoke in the third person saying, "He belongs to me. Get out of here." I don't know if that's the actual voice, but probably something like that.
The he was referring to is Don Cherry. Yeah.
But, you know, what's interesting is if you want to look for the signs of an exorcism, according to our teen girl exorcism squad, one of the things you look for is if they know historical facts they shouldn't have known.
No, really? So, like, Satan
what does
is
that
really
mean?
Good at trivia?
You have access to Wikipedia? You believe in evolution?
historical
Dude,
facts
I, of all
known.
The elements of Satan, I would have never guessed that he would be really, really good on pub trivia night.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Satan's like oh,
let
no, 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 don't worry,
guys.
I got this. I'm Satan.
He's like annoyingly, frustratingly bad about it. He's just like, guys, you done arguing? I'll tell you how it was.
Exactly.
Mark Anthony.
I'll let you guys get one. Oh, well, go ahead. Don't worry about it. Nope. If you guys can't get it, I'll come in at the end.
Passive-aggressive Satan.
Yeah.
he's just all like, when they lose by one point, he's like, I told you I had that one. Y'all know.
You had it.
No, you don't believe me. You don't believe old
Why
Scotch.
You guys don't listen to me.
God. I tell you.
So, you know, touching on the religion angle for just a moment here, It is exorcism is fascinating to me because you can have a discussion about where did the universe begin and prime movers and that kind of thing, and it's sort of abstract, or you know, even a couple thousand years ago, did miracles occur or whatever? That's one thing. But the idea that people are walking around and literally Satan is inside of them walking out, or you know, looking out. Just
The part that blows my mind is the consistent, like, well, if it happens today, they have mental illness. But if it happened 2,000 years ago, then, you know, who knows? 50-50.
Yeah,
but who believes that?
I don't know. I just kind of think the idea of a bunch of educated people sitting around going, well, maybe it's the devil, you know?
Well, but isn't that's a question of our very... our comprehension of what, you know, consciousness is we don't know what's behind other people's eyes. And, you know, it could be from one to whatever, you know, the great X factor is what is the person right in front of me thinking? And that could be being guided by the voices of Satan himself.
I'll tell you what, that's one thing that I got to give mad props. There's a lot about the Catholic dogma that kind of drives me up a wall, but one thing you cannot deny is they take like their Satan possession very seriously. Like they take an almost scientific view towards the double checking of whether or not they're
towards yelling at people that say they're obsessed
by Satan.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, let's back up there. I'll play devil's advocate in a moment.
Ooh. Wait.
But I'm gonna attack that point.
Do me a favor.
I mean,
can you represent me? I'm playing pub trivia.
I'm gonna go out on a limb here. We might get angry letters. The devil is not real. Okay. And so when you get, you know, people who say, the devil's in me, the devil's in me. That's a crazy person.
That's a little bit presumptuous. We just got an email. We just got an email. It says,
"I'm the devil."
It says, "Andrew, keep going. Love this. S.
Yeah.
Satan at hell.biz."
They're pretty scientific about it. What is scientific about a conclusion where it ends up? Oh, it's Satan.
Well, no, because they at least try to break down the they actually ask the questions like, okay, if what is the difference between something truly supernatural and just being mental illness or being, you know, a lucky shape of the wood that just happens to look like Jesus or whatever, or the Virgin Mary or whatever. It's like, look, let me tell you, man, you do not get anything close to that from any of the other Christian religions.
Well, few of the other religions are involved in verifying and confirming miracles in contemporary times.
Well, that's just
and
it.
The Catholic Church, and again, I have a lot of respect for
the Catholic Church. This is why I respect the Catholic Church, because Catholic Church says, look, man, there's no dividing line of the magic age and the current age. It's like if magic happened back then, magic is going to happen right now.
And
they will
declare certain things as magical in contemporary times. And I'm saying, are they doing it in the most critical way? And there's, it's interesting to read some of the accounts of people asked to give tests.
Let me put it this way. They're doing it in the most consistent way, where it's like the say what you will about the Catholic faith and their beliefs, they're consistent in them 100%. And they're like, yes, they'll look you in the eye and be like, yes, this is the physical body of Christ I'm eating now. This is Christ's actual blood that I'm drinking.
But that's okay. That's you know, the Eucharist is one thing. But when you look at there are stories you read about people who are invited as outside experts to testify to, you know, whether or not religious miracles occur, so if they can make somebody a saint or whatever, and you find out how that testimony that gets thrown away when it's politically inconvenient.
I don't know what
they
that
have
testimony
a favorite.
Is.
I guess
the
that's what I'm saying is there may
the
be the veneer.
Not
a kangaroo
real.
Court's still
crazy.
A kangaroo court.
You guys are all cuckoo bananas. What's going on here? There's no devil, you silly geese. Go fly north for the winter.
So,
well, now that we've offended all the Catholics, who's our sponsor, Justin?
Brian, I'm glad you asked. This one comes from James Nickerson. James says, my son Andrew is turning 11 on May 2nd, and he's a huge fan of Brian Brushwood. Any chance you could get Brian to wish him a happy birthday on the next show? If you guys would sing, it would be even better.
Oh, man. How do I even say this? No. It's not going to happen. I can't do that. I'm contractually.
Come on. Just a little. For Andrew.
What's his name?
The guy bought a spot, Bri. You can't give him just a little, just the first bar?
Andrew?
What, Andrew. He just turned 11. He's a huge fan of yours. Okay. Make his day.
All right, look. Let me tell you. Andrew, I think you're awesome. And I'm really excited for your birthday. What, you want me to start singing?
Andrew, you have to pay rights
if you
sing it.
Andrew,
come on.
Andrew, I'm legally prevented from actually singing the happy birthday song. It's copywritten. If we sing it, the stormtroopers will come. Screw it. I'm going to fight the police. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Andrew.
All right, that's enough of this iTunes music clip.
Happy birthday to you. Dude, seriously, happy birthday. 11's a magical time. Enjoy your young tween years while you still can, because soon you'll be old and wrinkly like me.
Yes.
Oh, good Lord. You're horrifying for this young boy. Jeez.
Andrew's
thank
awesome.
You very much to James Nickerson for supporting the show.
And thank you to Andrew. Happy birthday, bro.
So yeah. On the subject of miracles, I'm going to be 24 hours in the city of Turin, Italy, home of
the Shroud of Turin.
The Shroud of Turin.
I was
the Winter Olympics.
I was in love with the whole Shroud of Turin myth when I was in early high school. I thought that was the most amazing. Like, I read all the stories about how impossible to fake. Nobody could have blah, blah, blah. And I remember, like, having my heart broken in college when I watched. They're like, oh, we're pretty sure it went like this. And then they just, like, had this bas-relief. Is that how you say bas-relief clay?
Bas-relief.
Yeah, there you go. Bas-relief clay thing. And they just rubbed rust on it. And it looked exactly like the Shroud of Turin. And they're like, that was popular in the Middle Ages. Which, by the way, that's when the carbon dating dates this to. And I was like, oh, man.
Yeah,
what is
a kid?
Can we get a primer on the Shroud of Turin?
I just thought that, well, I guess if you leave a thing on a dead person, it'll all kind of rot and leave that stained. I thought it was like a dead person stain. I didn't appreciate the fact that it was supposed to be this magic Polaroid.
Yeah. But Justin brings up a good point. For those who aren't hip to all the background on the Shroud of Turin, what can we say about it to bring people up to speed?
The Shroud of Turin is a holy relic that I think the Catholic Church is a bit more ambivalent about its official status, that is supposed to be the image of Jesus. That it was.
It does
a,
look
a,
very Jesus-like.
It was a burial shroud attributed. They said that was Jesus' burial shroud, and it has the image of a man that looks like what we see in medieval representations of Jesus. And so for a long time, people considered it an official holy relic, proof of Jesus's time on earth. And it was held up as like, you know, this is one of these hard pieces of proof. It's since been, as Brian pointed out, they've carbon dated the carbon fibers in there, carbon dated the cotton fibers in there, the muslin that it's made from, and found out where it was made, when it was made. We pretty much know how it was made. And it still hasn't stopped the faithful who, you know, look upon this icon as something important. But to, you know, skeptical members of the church, you know, who believe in the majesty of the miracles, et cetera, generally tend to say, nah, it was probably a medieval fake, but, you know, maybe it still serves an important part in reminding us of faith.
Kind of also looks like Be Real from Cypress Hill.
It does, actually. It looks like...
Kind of looks like this Shroud of Turin is insane in the membrane.
Insane in the brain.
So, speaking of music and representations, Coachella this year had a very, very special. The Coachella Music Festival had a very special guest.
Yes.
Mr. Tupac Shakur.
Yeah, okay.
Speaking of fraudulent images of iconic figures.
There you go. So, real quick, do you happen to know, Justin, the audio that they played? Because at some point he turns and goes, how you doing, Coachella? Like, did Tupac 15 years ago play Coachella and they took that audio from it or something?
I think that was the Coachella part, I believe, was fabricated. I do know that the big element of him performing the song that he performed, which was Hail Mary, he never performed that live. That was off an album that was set to come out and he would tour behind after he died. It was the first big album that came out after he got shot in Las Vegas and was murdered. So he had that song by Tupac was, and to be honest, is still never, you know, will be performed by him, but that was the closest that we'll ever get.
And we should point out that basically what they did was they had some Mylar set up and they did the old Pepper's Ghost illusion where you have a transparent film at 45 degrees and you have something that that's illuminated that when you stand at the right angle, you see kind of a ghostly image of it there. It's not a hologram for all the talk about it being a hologram. However, I'll say this, two things. First of all, it's visually arresting to see an actual Snoop Dogg and a virtual Tupac on the stage together. That imagery is what captivated everyone. And the energy of the two of them appearing to perform live together on stage really was badass. But the actual physical body, and this is the thing, is the clips you're seeing on YouTube are all very low resolution. So it's hard to tell that this is a 3D model of Tupac. This is not like he managed to record something live before he died or something. Digital Domain, who did a bunch of special effects for video games and for a bunch of stuff for the movies, created like a 3D version of his body. It looks like the beginning. It looks like an intro to a WWE wrestling video game.
Yeah, there's, I would say, you know, it depends in moments. There are some moments where he looks like Grand Theft Auto, and then there's some moments where it looks more, and specifically because they were able to, map out the
rotoscope.
What we knew was Tupac's behavior on stage. So there were just certain movements that looked normal. And I think your brain just sort of filled in the pattern and said, well, that's authentic. That's not authentic. But it was, I think, for what it was supposed to look like the ghost of Tupac appeared on stage at Coachella, sang Hail Mary by himself, or rapped Hail Mary by himself, and then rapped Two of America's Most Wanted with Tupac, which really only reminded the world how fat and old Snoop Dogg has gotten compared to
Well, ever, it's not even fair because, like, that's not even actual Tupac. It's virtual, perfect, zero body fat, you know, magic Tupac.
Yes. No, they didn't drag. It wasn't his animated corpse.
No. But I'm saying, like what I'm saying is the actual Tupac never even looked as good as the virtual version that they made.
I don't know. That didn't seem odd to me. Like, he was always a cut guy. He was always a pretty chiseled dude.
Go on. Tell me how else did you feel about him?
I mean, I'm just saying that sometimes when you get really into it, you'd have the beads of sweat just kind of seductively trailing down.
You would
his
just
brow
imagine
perfect
that if one of them landed on you,
down his washboard abs,
you would get like 1% of his magic talent, and then you would go on tour. That's why you went to every show.
But all right, so yay or nay, and it was, to be fair, Tupac as well as Nate Dogg, who was also dead, who came out, and nobody talks about hologram Nate Dogg, but yeah. Did you think that it was not cool, or was it cool?
I thought it was cool, but what was cooler was when Ghost Yoda and Ghost Anakin and Ghost Obi-Wan came out as well.
I mean. But that wasn't live. Like, you tell me that isn't going to be – that's not a different experience live?
No. Okay. I will say this. It was electric. In fact, I watched it live. I actually I saw –
You were watching Snoop and Dre live?
I did. Because I saw people talking about it on Twitter. So I watched on YouTube. And it was completely rad when it actually happened. But you got to realize there's so many limitations. Like, now – what I am pushing back against is not what they did at Coachella. I think that was a great idea for what they did at Coachella. What I'm pushing back against is the idea of there's already talks about a tour, a live tour with Tupac on tour, where they'll get a bunch of characters to dance around with a video screen and pretend. It's the equivalent of them going on tour with MC Scat Cat. You know, it's like
can that actually happen?
Sure, it can. Now it finally can. MC Scat Cat and Tupac, live on tour. The tour you never thought you'd see. Romany Malco is going to MC and introduce. Tijuana Jackson will be interviewing him afterwards. So
you push back against that. The one-time thing, okay. The tour, not okay.
Yes. What the reason is because once that happens, you enter that, I'm not cool with the Michael Jackson tour with Cirque du Soleil. I'm not a fan of the Viva Elvis Cirque du Soleil show. This bizarre cat, like, who got paid? Did any of Tupac's family get paid for that? I know the label got paid.
Well, likeness rights and music rights. I mean, I think I don't know who the
we are entering an age where this matters more than ever, that you need to own your own likeness in perpetuity.
If they didn't and they're supposed to, I'm sure we're going to hear about it. You know, right. the estates of these people manage it really well. Let me ask you a question though. Is that you brought up the Elvis show? There's the Beatles show. There's the Michael Jackson show coming. And it's one thing for me to say what I would like to see because of what I'm a fan of. It's another thing for me to say what other people are a fan of. You know, there's an industry of Elvis impersonators.
Sure.
There's an industry of bands that sound like the Beatles and go up there and go do that and perform those things because there's something about that. People want to celebrate that. And the easiest way is to put somebody up there, dress them up, and somebody who, in this case, a person who spent a large part of their life learning this to be able to do this, and you celebrate that. I listen to recorded music of people who are dead.
That's a good point.
You know, and so much of what we listen to too in pop music is digitally altered. So much of that is, I couldn't tell you what the real Christina Aguilera probably sounds like, or the real Britney Spears, or somebody, somebody who's not even talented as even they may be. You know, some of these people, I don't know. And I think if I were a fan of something that I wanted to see, and it was the only way to do that, and to be around a bunch of people who are a fan of this, I'm okay with that.
Well, and understand, I'm okay with whatever people feel like spending a buck on. I'm not one of these elitists who wants to get in other people's faces about what they do or don't want to see. Because you're right. Like, I one of my most precious memories was taking my kids to go see the Beatles at the World Showcase Theater at Epcot. And as far as my kids were concerned, they were the Beatles. What did it matter, right? That it was just four jokers.
And then you met Abraham Lincoln.
Yes, and yeah, exactly, because it's magic, right? But it's I think the only thing that bums me out, and I don't even know that it'll stick with me for a long time, is just knowing that it's a recording that somebody pressed play on and that we're all getting excited to go watch a movie, but we all pretend it's not a movie when really it's just a movie. You know what I mean?
But I guess yeah, the question is...
You ever go to like your planetarium and watch the Pink Floyd laser light show?
I think that's exactly what I'm talking about. I think that's exactly the sentiment that I'm pushing back against, is I don't want the Pink Floydification laser showiness of this to persist. That's what bums me out.
But let's look at it from what Andrew said in terms of a fan perspective, a fan gathering perspective. If and maybe, you know, Tupac was a massive artist, but let's say you had other acts that were, you know, had a very specific fan base that you really enjoyed and you wanted to come, you know, and they came into your town.
Hologram Bill Hicks. Like, they go back, they carve out all of his best bits, all of his they synthesize the perfect 1 hour Bill Hicks comedy show, and they digitize everything, and you could go watch him live. You know what? If I frame it that way, I already bought a ticket. I wrote down in crayon one ticket to Bill Hicks just now on the off chance that maybe they make that.
If you found an album that he recorded that was unpublished.
Okay, but that's not... Well, okay. All right. I mean, but I'm saying even if it is synthesized, I'm okay with all that. It's a really weird artistic.
It is weird. It is weird. And we can get into, you know, how sophisticated the technology was or wasn't, but it's only going to get more sophisticated, and we're in a very interesting inflection point looking forward to.
Here's what I worry about is it seems like after people die, I don't know. I guess that's not true, because we're still worshiping William Shakespeare 400 years after the
Mozart,
fact.
Mozart, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's some part of me that worries that if now these icons, exist forever and they are the pantheon of great art of its variety, and it just gets harder and harder for more people to squeeze in. But I guess that's not true. I mean, we have Madonna, and yet there is still room for a Lady Gaga and so on.
And we consume more.
Yeah, no, and we continue to fragment. That's one of the great things about the internet, is we're endlessly splintering, and it's not enough that you're into, you know, techno music. You're into electronica. You're not into electronica. You're into dubstep. You're into
go look at a TV guide from 20 years ago, and look what was on primetime television.
All five channels.
Yeah, sure. And there was a lot of stuff. It's funny because every now and then somebody will go get one of these old series and they'll put them out on DVD. And you wonder, you know, do Alzheimer's patients buy these? Who buys these? Because they're just not good.
Right.
Some shows hold up really well. Some shows kind of have a wit and they stick around. You know, MASH can still be a funny show.
Right.
You know, other shows, not so much.
All right. Now,
MASH plays really weird now. Like, MASH had such a unique energy that, like you watch it now and you're like, I really don't even know what this show is trying to do. Like, it would get really oddly serious, and then it would be, like, kind of goofy, you know, like, oh, what happened here kind of comedy. Like, it's just, like, that's a show that now its success to me is more baffling. It gets more baffling as time goes on that struck such a nerve. With television viewers.
Now, in true Weird Things spirit, I think we actually touched on something and blew right past it. What other artists would you be so interested to see that it short circuits the entire discussion, and all of a sudden you don't care what it is, you just like, yes, if it's a hologram of blank, I'll go.
My dream has always been, way before this, always been is, I would love to take some of the people I thought were really brilliant people, philosophers and just smart people like Richard Feynman, et cetera, be able to put together a big database of everything smart they said, be able to put together some AI that could figure out how they would respond to stuff, go watch them lecture, you know, go listen to them talk, maybe be able to ask them questions that he might be able to answer. So not even in music, I'd love to be able to do that.
Now you know that they essentially already do that with less impressive technology, you know, in Philadelphia, where they have all these characters who are hired to study the founding fathers, and they each pretend to be them, and they'll give the speeches, but then they'll actually interact with you and discuss things, and you can ask them questions, which I think is pretty rad.
I'll tell you, it's neat, but I've actually known I've known a Hamilton impersonator, and I know some people do that stuff. But the one thing in my experience with that is, you get a lot of what that impersonator thought was important about them.
Yeah.
You know, and when you talk to a Jefferson guy, you know, guy who's a Jefferson, he's a big fan of Jefferson, but he ain't no Jefferson.
All right. You know? All right.
But it is, but you're all right. We do that. We do that already. But that would be, you know, what's going to be the best way for children 20 years from now to sit down and learn from a classroom is to have virtual Thomas Jefferson come up in front and give a talk.
And even take questions. Well,
and what Andrew's saying is what you're getting closer and closer, as close as possible, to true intent, to the short of having that person alive. If there is a algorithm that only responds to, you know, a database of thoughts.
Yeah,
and
like,
ideas,
like Brian said, response. You know, take questions, and then we're going to get into this place. I fervently believe that before we, you know, if we can upload our consciousness to computers, or maybe we make copies or whatever, when Siri and Google Voice and all these things get a lot smarter and can have conversations already, you know, it's funny, you know, there was a thing about how many people didn't know the Titanic was real. And I love the fact that people were willing to admit that. That was real. I love the fact that people were cheerfully going on Twitter going, hey, I'm a dope. But you look at people who have discussions with chat robots.
Sure, sure.
And brings me to our next topic, if we want to do a break here.
Hold on, babe, before we do that, let me mention that Dave McCullough has sponsored this podcast. He would like you to go check out his first ebook, Clouded. Head on over to Amazon right now and search for Clouded by Devin. Devin McCullough, DevinMcCullough. And it is called Clouded. Thank you, Devin, for sponsoring this here podcast.
Thank you,
by
Devin.
By all means, everybody, absolutely go over there, type in Clouded, take a look. You know, speaking as an independent author, we live and die by, you know, listeners like you guys checking it out, seeing what we have to say, and taking a spin on it. I think, I thank Devin for sponsoring us, and I hope you guys give him a chance and take a look at what he has out there. So, researchers come out with a paper coming out, so to speak, just as I lose my notes here. Researchers come out with a paper saying that we may be very close to coming out of the computer that can pass the Turing test. And just to recap that, Alan Turing was a mathematician who came up with some very interesting theories that still affect a lot of the ways we think about mathematics and computation, the Turing machine, et cetera. One of his ideas was, if we want to try to figure out if a robot is sentient, we really can't know what goes on inside somebody else's head. We know our friends, everybody else around us, based upon how we interact. And he said, well, it's only fair that we use that sort of same criteria to judge a computer. And so if you sat a person in one room, put them in front of a terminal, and then another room you had either a person or a computer, if the judge could not tell the difference between a computer and a human, then it's kind of fair to say that judge is probably sentient, because we have no more proof that it is or isn't sentient than we do a person.
Right. Well, and I believe the exact language he used was something more along the lines of, for all intents and purposes,
in a British accent.
It is. For all intents and purposes, by the way, I like boys. It might as well.
Oh, come on now.
For shame.
By the way, that's, I think, the big story is whether or not he should get a posthumous pardon for. I mean, it's so cruel and wrong what the British government did to him just because he happened to be gay. But anyway, he says, for all intents and purposes, it does think. If you can't tell the difference between that and a human being.
You know, and people can get into like, well, we know we can. It's like, you don't know what goes on in somebody else's head, so it's only fair. And so that's what the Turing test is. And there are a lot of arguments where people go on and on about, oh, the Turing test doesn't really measure this. Like, no, it does. All it does is say, if I can't tell what's going on in that box, no more than I can tell what's going inside of your head, then it'd be kind of unfair for me to say, well, that counts as human and you don't.
Right.
That's not to say that end of discussion, but I totally, if you understand the intent there. So anyhow, this researcher's come out and says that he thinks we're very, very close to being able to come up with a computer that can pass the Turing test, which doesn't mean that it's really sentient, but would be able to fool the hell out of us. And I think it was on the forecast a couple weeks ago. That was my claim, was that we're going to pass the Turing test a lot more quickly than we realize, not because we have super smart computers, but because we can look at large data sets in a different way.
Yeah, no, I totally believe that. You know, out of all of the responses to the idea of the Turing test, the one that annoyed me the most was there's a bunch of thought experiments about saying, like, why it's a good idea or why it's a bad idea. And one of the ones that says why it's a bad idea is it says, imagine you are in a sealed box, and in through the front comes in a piece of paper with a question written on it. And your job is to read that question and then turn around and riffle through this book and find that exact question and then find an answer for it, and then write down whatever the answer is and then feed it back out there. And then keep on doing that back and forth. Now, in this, let's say to the person outside the box, they're able to have this what they think is a conversation with a thinking computer, and they're able to say, clearly this is a thinking being. And meanwhile, you being the guy who's doing nothing but shuffling papers around and giving pre-written responses for everything, you're like, no, you idiot, this is not a real thing. This is not a sentient being. Which I never liked that at all, because while I do understand it's something you can wrap your mind around, to me that's the equivalent of suddenly bestowing your amygdala with consciousness. And your amygdala, the one part of your brain, is like, you know, data set 314-21866 binary 7 code whatever yields output, you know, hexadecimal 318. What I'm saying, gibberish comes in, gibberish comes out. And bestowing like consciousness on one part of the brain doesn't suddenly invalidate the brain as a conscious thinking organ. Likewise, in this thought experiment, the fact that it places you as a virtual cog in a bigger system, but you being sentient are able to look around and nothing else looks sentient to you, invalidates the whole thing. I never really liked.
Well, yeah, that thought experiment is very shallow too. And the problem is that it assumes this book can have an answer to everything. And if I ask you one, you can't, it doesn't, how big does this book have to be? Because it has to predict every potential answer in the entire universe, because I can synthesize information. I can say,
we can complicate it. We can imagine instead of a book, it's this rotary machine where you punch in a code and then you return a hand crank and a pre-written response comes out, or a combination of words.
There can't be a pre-written response to, you know, what did you feel about the last question? You know, what did you, right. You know, do you have a memory of listening? You know, what was the first time you saw Romeo and Juliet? Tell me, you know, and then you have to invent such a what I'm saying is that there are so many potential ways that you can play one bit of information against another. It's an infinite. You know, you run out of, you know, you can take a very limited data set, and the human brain can take one thing and another thing, and you're going to have more potential outcomes than you're going to have particles in the universe.
Right.
It's
right.
One of the things that, you know, one of the reasons why we don't need to be as afraid of super intelligent AI as we should, because you can be creative with very few neurons and come up with unpredictable results that the, you know, a computer the size of the universe will never come up with.
Right.
So we both agree.
Well, yeah.
Thumbs down.
Can I ask what, and this was partly covered in Wired, you know, the Turing test stuff was an essay, and I think one of the science journals that came out. But Wired asked the question, what's different the day after we beat the Turing test compared to the day before? Like, yes, it is this benchmark. Yes, it will be important in the history of what artificial intelligence is. But really, what does it prove?
Okay, well, I'll tell you what it is. It's the exact same thing as if we verifiably pronounce definite proof that there's life on Ganymede. It's also the exact same thing of when we detect a signal from Andromeda. Nothing. Like, all of the great philosophical questions don't affect your day-to-day life. And that's not a factor. That doesn't say that the Turing test is not important. It's just saying that it's a philosophical question, and all philosophical questions amount to bupkis compared to putting food on the table.
Yeah, I certainly think that's true in the short term. But if it all of a sudden if you look at, you know, the future as these probabilities, all of a sudden, you know, instead of collapsing, when a whole new probability opens up, and if we get a radio signal from Ganymede, we can kind of say, you know, there might be more of that. There's going to be more. It's going to be a funnel that gets bigger. And the day that we something passed the Turing test. One, that's a pretty, you know, it's heralded as a very important point in artificial intelligence, because that's the point at which all the crazy stuff becomes possible. We now know this could be done. And you know, for the average person, yeah, it's not. It's like, okay, well, what's for dinner?
If you want to know what it will be like when we pass the Turing test, go back and see what it was like when the theory of evolution was announced, you know, and go back and see what it was like when I don't know if I want to put the Gutenberg press in there because that was a technological innovation,
but when we got to the moon,
what that means is the Turing test means that it can look at a very complex data set and give human level responses to that. And if you want to, you know, right now, one of the things they're doing at the Watson Project is trying to create a better doctor.
Sure,
and when
sure.
You have a, you know, when you have a system that can be twice as smart as the smartest doctor on the planet, there's a big influence. Well, but you know, to your point, though, the first time we discovered semiconductors, you know, it was 30 or 40 years before somebody sat around and made a transistor.
So I think Justin actually nailed it when he was talking about the significance. Like, what did it matter when we set foot on the moon? I mean, that was the most significant technological achievement of the 20th century. But did that change how, you know, the price of milk on, you know, the next day?
Tremendous cultural ramifications. You know, small agents every day. The biggest selling consumer device is sold on a thing called Siri. And the idea that we just made this big, huge phase shift, when you tell Siri now, you know, hey, go find you know, the best, you know, what movie am I going to like next week? Or you can ask Siri questions the same way your friend. That's a huge technological leap because that affects all of us. AI, whether we want it or not, is a big part of our lives, from drug discovery and all this other stuff. You know, the moon was a proving point, but
prove that we had an American big, strong chest. Suck on that, Russia.
Big, well, we tall got rocket. The moon. That wasn't just a bunch of cock-a-doodle-doo crowing. Like, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Newtonian physics, bro. Slide rules. We went to the moon on slide rules. Wrap your brain around that.
Dude, it's balling out. Well, let me give you guys the last of our sponsored spots for this evening's show. Please, everybody, put your hands together for DJ Diddle. He wanted to say thank you for creating an amazing show and keep up the great work. Do me a favor and follow him on Twitter at @DJDIDDLE_. And thank him for sponsoring the Weird Things podcast.
You know what? I had a flat tire the other week, and all of a sudden this raging badass pimp mobile pulled to us. It was floating too, and it just pulled and it landed, and out popped DJ Diddle_. And I was just like, oh, thank you for replacing my tire. And he said, no, Brian, thank you for the Weird Things podcast. And
yes,
then he floated up to heaven.
And also a reminder, if you would like to sponsor the show, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor, and you can get your message on this program.
So last item before we go into picks.
Yay.
We've talked back and forth about SpaceX, space elevators, and everything else like that. Gentlemen, what would I tell you if I could put you into space for free?
Oh, hold on. You mean actual low Earth orbit?
Low Earth orbit? Geocentric orbit?
For freezies?
For freezies.
It don't cost me no dollars, or you're talking about, like, it won't cost me no angular momentum?
Won't cost you no energy.
No energy?
Well, there'll be energy, but you're not going to need any rocket fuel or anything like that.
I want to hear more about your theory, sir.
Okay. Part of the big thing is, how do you get into space cheaper? And you know, I had somebody ask me the other day on Twitter, like, hey, I want to write a story about space elevators. Will it be a reality in 200 years? And I'm like, 200 years, they're going to be boring. They're going to be like, they're going to sound as quaint as people in, you know, the 1800s trying to build a railroad to the moon, you know?
Yeah.
You know, the ideas we're going to have are going to be way better than ours now. And, you know, maybe we'll have a space elevator.
God, that's one
know.
Of the weird things that smart money always bets on future innovation. And dumb idiots like us just assume, like, well, how are we going to do it with the things that we know exist today?
That's so, never a problem for me. I'm never like, how are we going to do it? I just assume we are.
And we've talked a little bit about it before, okay? And there's a little bit of news came out that maybe made this a little bit more of reality, all right? So Boeing has a new thruster it's putting onto satellites. It's an ion rocket. You know, we've used ion propulsion systems before, and basically what they use is they use an electrical charge to accelerate an ion, a little atom, a charged particle, very, very fast. It uses a very small supply of them. It just sends them out very, very fast. It doesn't give you a big explosion like a chemical explosion or chemical rocket, just but it's slow and steady. So instead of shooting all your fuel at once, it's a little bit at a time, and it builds up over time.
What did it say? Like it's the equivalent force of a single piece of paper pressure on your hand at regular Earth gravity, right?
Yeah, exactly. But you add it up, and it's a constant force over time. So Boeing has this thruster, and they're testing it now. We use satellite thrusters a little bit to move position to actually keep them from deorbiting. We'll actually use ion propulsion for that because it just takes a small little amount of fuel to do that. They've got one that's a little bit more powerful that they say will be able to take a satellite. Now I'm going to get to my point here. That'll take a satellite that's in low Earth orbit and move it into a geosynchronous orbit. Okay. Which is a pretty big deal. It's not just a matter of you don't just hop off the Earth and you're in space. You hop off the Earth and you go 22,000 miles an hour. You're in orbit. You're falling, but you never hit the ground. To get higher up takes more fuel. To get to a point where you're geostationary is even more complex. To escape Earth's orbit, you need another. You know, it's a challenge. Okay?
Sure, sure.
So they say they're gonna. You know, that's a new thing they're developing. It's gonna be coming very soon. I don't have the data when it's launching or whatever. But the point is, it's using an ion thruster to go from low Earth orbit to geosynchronous orbit. Okay. There's another idea, which is right now doesn't have a whole lot of traction. It's only a small group of engineers have been working on this, and we've talked a little bit about this before on this show. When you see those photos of like a chair hanging in space and stuff, where you see these photos that are taken in space, they're actually taken from balloons.
Mm-hmm.
There's a company that does that, and they have plans, ambitious plans for what they can do with this technology. This
Wait a minute. Are you saying what I think you're saying? Are you saying just hop a balloon, float up to your low Earth orbit, and then catch a free ride up to geosynchronous?
Well, it would take – what they're playing right now is a couple stages. They want to build what they call a dark sky station. So when you see that the highest altitude you'd be able to go with one of those conventional type of balloons, which is in black. It's not actually in space like, you know, what would win you a SpaceX prize, but it's in super high upper atmosphere. And so they want to build a big platform up there, a big station, okay, which – would do a lot of the things you could do with a satellite, okay? But this would be like 100,000 feet up. This would be like three times the distance. What's that?
I said, sure. I see what you're saying, yeah.
So what their idea is to build this permanent platform, and it's a bunch of big, huge balloons supporting this. You have one craft, one lighter-than-air craft that floats you up to that platform. And then from that platform, they have a triangular, big, huge balloon system that then takes a very slow orbit – or takes a very – not orbit. It takes a very – very slow pattern, spiral pattern going upwards. And their plan is to basically at one point is to, you know, use fuel cells powering, some electrical rockets or eventually solar. And now with Boeing coming up with this more efficient thruster, you could theoretically build a blimp to space.
That would be unbelievably rad. Are you kidding me? That would be amazing.
It would take, it'd be like a cruise ship and how long it takes, because it would take weeks to get there, but if you can, you could be solar powered to orbit.
Oh my God, this would be huge. And I'll tell you what, no matter how sexy, I mean, here's the thing: like, when the Cold War was essentially, you know, the space race was a proxy for the Cold War. You wanted these big, drastic rocket explosions to stick a middle finger in the face of the communists. But like nowadays that we're entering the commerce age of space, nobody cares how sexy your liftoff looks. What they care about is how cheap you can get to orbit.
Maybe what you do is you put your people on your rockets where you're willing to pay, you know, $100 pound or whatever, or maybe get it down to $15, $20 per pound. You pay $1,000 for a trip into orbit.
Yeah.
And your luggage in your house is lifted, you know, by space ferry.
Dude, space ferries.
Okay. And this, by the way, you know, this solar powered whatever, all the elements for this, all the elements are within grasp now. It's the kind of thing where $1 billion of funding, we might have this. It's not like a space elevator where we still need...
We're going to find out that PayPal already has one of these in orbit right now.
What's that?
We're going to find out that a private corporation like PayPal already has one of these.
Well, it'd be easy to spot, but it's an exciting idea, and it's maybe be, you know, we have on one hand, we have Elon Musk revolutionizing space and Jeff Bezos. But, you know, we may get some of these. I think when we get this, the people looking towards doing this, that, hey, how about if I build a solar powered craft that takes you into orbit?
Yeah. Wow.
So, like, what you're saying is there's like the idea of the space elevator is, like, even as we speak, rapidly becoming antiquated to the point of irrelevance.
Well, I mean, I would say like, it may be that the way we make the space elevator is just by running blimps up and down, you know?
Well, like, why would we need a space elevator if we had something like this?
Because once you create the elevator, you have a balance that all of a sudden requires no transfer of energy. All you got to do is you got to essentially just, you know, have a heavier thing pull down, lighter thing go up. Whereas every time you're sending up blimps, you got to refill and you got to manufacture the lighter than air gas and all that stuff.
Space elevator is still an energy cost to get out there. You still have to lift that up there. And that's the idea of, and you might be able to make it back solar powered. You might be able to use surface area and it could be eventually be solar, but, I'm not ready to throw out the idea of a space elevator just yet, but I think that this kind of thing is much more theoretically doable. I mean, the physics for actually taking this sort of in a slow moving lighter than aircraft upper atmosphere and then getting out beyond there and to keep going, even when you start to lose almost all of your aerodynamic, you know, assist from that. Apparently the math works out by people smarter than me. And now that you talk about these ion thrusters, which use such a small amount of fuel that you're basically could have the whole operation be solar powered.
God, that's amazing, dude. That is amazing.
It's something we didn't even think about 10 years ago.
Something I didn't think about 10 minutes ago, and you start talking about it. It's awesome.
It's why we have weird things. So thinking of things we didn't think about, say that real
fast.
Hey,
speaking of which, can we just put the word out? Look, we're doubling down our efforts here at the Weird Things Podcast, making sure to have a new one for you every Monday night. So if you want to join us live.
Well, we record Monday night. They go up Tuesday.
Yeah, right. But do us a favor. Why don't you let your friends know? Because I'm sure a lot of people are like, well, I would tell my buddies about weird things, but they only come out every third moon. But now we're coming out totally regular.
Yeah, we're mooning the crap out of you.
Third moon in a row right now.
Third moon in a row. And we'll just keep on mooning you until you tell your friends about weird things.
Yeah, check it out. I mean, I think the response so far has been good on the downloads. People seem to enjoy the fact that they get a new one of these. But I think it's super fun. So check it out. And as always, you know, leave a 5-star review on iTunes. And that helps us with the rankings and more people see us. And right. Let's go ahead. Let's start storming the science charts.
Yeah.
I want to start tickling science Fridays.
Let's dominate the science with our idiocy. Let us begin the idiocracy with us.
The March of the Morons.
The March of the Morons starts with me. I got a black armband with a big red M printed on it.
You know what I'd love to do now that we're doing this on a regular basis too? Now I'm thinking about, like, I want to get one of the people from the company that's working on the Dark Sky Station and has that. See if I can't get them on the show here to talk to us or do an interview.
Oh, that'd be great.
But you see, I'll tell you, to book these people, we can't just say we're three idiots who pretend to talk science. We need to say that we have the number one science podcast, and that's only possible through you guys.
Well, the march has begun. Do you hear the clump clomp of feet marching their way to number one? I do, friends. Join the crowd.
Yes.
Let's talk picks.
All right.
Let us talk picks. Who wants to go first?
I got a pick here.
Go.
All right. So this is a little off the beaten path, but I'm going to recommend the most recent episode of Mad Men on AMC. Now you might be saying, Justin, the hell does Mad Men have to do with weird things?
Justin, what the hell does Mad Men have to do with weird things?
It ain't about, it's not Walking Dead.
It's not about Walking Dead.
It ain't crazy like that. It's not the Game of Thrones. Well, I'll tell you why. Without spoiling a whole lot, we were introduced on the last episode to a character we had not heard of before. Ben Hargrove, who was the pen name of the character Ken Cosgrove. And we were revealed that he was the nom de plume of his science fiction writing career. And it was a really awesome, so awesome of a subplot where he talked about one of his fairly well-received science fiction books is The Punishment of X4, about a robot who accidentally disassembles a bridge between two worlds and kills thousands of people, and then the trial that he has to endure, where the worlds decide whether or not the artificial intelligence is enough that it can punish actual malice. It was so great that Damon Lindelof, one of the co-creators and writers of Lost, started writing The Punishment of X4 fan fiction on his Twitter last night.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which you can go back.
Speaking
and
of
read.
Which, Damon Lindelof, I believe, is the one who tweeted out the Fat Betty link, the Mad Men.
Yes.
Did you see that, Justin?
I don't know. I mean, I know of the that she's fat in the show.
Yeah, I'll just give you a little taste for the audio listeners.
Fat Betty, blam blam, whoa, Fat Betty, blam blam, Fat Betty had a child, blam blam, ate all of her ice cream, blam blam, getting out of
that's
the
pretty table, amazing.
Blam blam, and ate some more ice cream, blam blam, whoa, Fat Betty, blam blam, whoa, Fat Betty, blam blam.
No, there we go. I'll tell you what. Damon Lindelof, go follow at Damon Lindelof and go download Signal 30, the new episode of Mad Men, which apparently also I'm reading right now, had another Lost shout-out where they misidentified the Texas college sniper Charles Whitman as Charles Widmore.
Oh, that's hilarious. Wow.
So, a little shout-out to Lost. But, very science fiction-y version of that show, which I enjoyed.
So I, with reservations, I'm going to, I don't know that this is a recommendation so much as a confession as to what's happening. And many people know that.
Sing it, Usher.
That one of my favorite television experiences was The Shield. If you haven't watched The Shield, you should watch The Shield. However, Shield is not available, for instance, streaming on Netflix, and we're all lazy individuals who don't have time for physical media to show up week after week at our doorstep. So instead, I have dived into Sons of Anarchy, which you'll hear me talk about on the Framerate podcast. But while I was sick, I just started plowing through those episodes, and I'm now halfway through season two. I expect to be done within 3 more days.
Sons of Anarchy is pretty rad.
So far, a season and a half into it, everything I'm enjoying about it is the things that it reminds me about The Shield, but it's not The Shield. So, like, if you haven't seen either of them, go, you know, The Shield. Go watch The Shield. Duh. But you know, if you've already seen The Shield and you're looking for a chick who maybe is a little more heavy set, but kind of reminds you of what The Shield looks like, and maybe she drops a dirty word, and then you're like, oh man, The Shield used to do that, and you make out with her in a closet, this is the one for you.
All right, I'm going to do my pick here, and the problem is, like, I haven't watched a movie or a TV show or anything since the last podcast.
What have you done? So you're just picking from your archive of your mind.
Yeah, and, like, the only thing I've tried watching on Netflix is Hook. And
wait, the movie?
And that's rough watching, I got to tell you. Steven Spielberg's Hook, you know, Robin Williams.
Yeah, Rufio!
Yeah,
dude, those kids were totally extreme,
totally rad to the max. So that's not going to be my pick.
The weird thing is that
Hook holds. There's something about, and I'd be curious to see. People want to email weirdthingsmail@gmail.com or at replyweirdthingscom on Twitter. My age range, I would say, anybody who is currently from 26 to 31. Has a very special place in their heart for Hook. And I'm not saying it's a good movie.
No, you know what's funny? I was in high school when it came out, and it has a special place in my heart. The weird part is when all the kids get together at the end and they do that musical number.
Whoa, Fat Betty, blam, blam.
So,
Fat Betty.
I'm going to do my real pick here.
Okay.
The Spirit of Brian Brushwood. And I plead just cultural ignorance because... I'm so afraid I'll pick something, a book I read before in the same position, but I'm going to pick a trailer.
Wait, I pick a trailer? Oh, wait, are you talking about the trailer for Prometheus? Did you see the final trailer?
Oh, I know what he's going to pick, and it's a good trailer.
The Total Recall trailer?
No, it's going to be Andrew's favorite new HBO series from Aaron Sorkin, the Keith Olbermann dramatization series.
I am picking. This is a director who I think is a very talented director. There's certain directors you go, all right, this person's going to be interesting. Duncan Jones. Okay, the guy, it's not from him, but like when Duncan Jones did Moon, I go, this movie's smart. This guy likes sci-fi.
Yeah.
When he did Source Code, I really dug Source Code.
Yeah.
It was a smaller movie than I wanted it to be, but it was cute, and I liked it a lot.
Well, and so now he's like your director, best friend on Twitter.
You ever seen the movie Brick?
Wait, what's that?
The movie Brick, directed by Ryan Johnson?
No.
Yes.
Brick stars Brick's Joseph amazing. Gordon-Levitt. It's a great movie. It's this sort of noir detective story told in modern day times about a kid in a high school trying to solve a murder, okay? That's not my pick. Ryan Johnson did that. His bigger movie he did after that was Brothers Bloom.
Oh, no, I did enjoy that.
Okay. His latest movie now, and this is a perfect pick for Weird Things, is called, have you seen the trailer for Looper?
No.
So when I heard Ryan Johnson wanted to do a science fiction film, a time travel film, a genre that I'm kind of like, man, let's see, I got excited. Stars Bruce Willis and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Okay, let me read you the synopsis, all right?
Wait, Joseph Gordon-Levitt was the kid in Third Rock from the Sun, is that right?
Yeah, yes. Inception, 300 Days of Summer.
No, I'm only going to remember him as the kid from Third Rock.
In a futuristic action thriller Looper, time travel will be invented, but it will be illegal and only available on the black market. When the mob wants to get rid of someone, they will send their target 30 years into the past where a Looper, a hired gun, like Joe, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, is waiting to mop up. Joe is getting rich and life is good until the mob decides to close the loop, sending back Joe's future self, played by Bruce Willis, for assassination.
Dude, this looks amazing. When does this come out?
Watching the trailer right now, which for audio listeners, which is the thousands of you that normally watch this podcast, not as entertaining. But let me tell you what. Go check out the Looper trailer after this podcast.
Yeah, Brian, turn on the volume.
Yeah, no, that's amazing, dude.
Just understand that Ryan Johnson is a very, very capable director. Like I said, Brick was fantastic. Brothers Bloom was great. And I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, let me just say, Brian's reaction of, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, the kid from Third Rock from the Sun. When Brick came out, he had just come off a very, very long kind of break from doing movies and being in show business. And it was another flick before that, and Brick was really his first big breakout. But he's insane in Brick. And Ryan Johnson's a super capable director. And this has kind of been, I think, circled on a lot of people's calendars for a very, very long time just because of the talent of the director and the heady sort of awesome concept to it. So go check out the trailer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
So those are our picks. Anything else anybody want to add?
This is a good evening. I like this. Let's continue to do this every Monday night and publish on Tuesday morning.
I'll tell you what. We thought we were going to have to be without Andrew because he was going to be out of town, but apparently you are going to be
back. Sorry to spoil your plans, boys.
No, sorry. I'm very... What? No.
What? I thought, no.
What's this? No, you so threw a party while I was gone?
We'll be back next week, and Andrew will have all sorts of fun Italia stories to regale us.
Talk about my new podcast I'm doing with Justin.
Yes. Oh, goddamn. So, also, folks, if you like this show, what you need to do is go download the Andrewine
pre-show. I'm about to talk about this in the pre-show. Justin's like, no, we'll talk about it during Weird Things. I'm like, okay, all right, it's cool.
Psych. And you got trick.
Okay, you can talk about it, and then we can talk about it together. So, Andrew Main Stories Podcast, it's available right now. It's really super awesome, and it is Andrew writing short stories and me reading them. And we have one episode out there right now, and there are going to be more to come, and it's really super cool, and I love doing it. And what else can you say? If you like Andrew's books or you want to give Andrew's books a shot, give Andrew's writing a shot, this is a great way to do it.
You can go to andrewmainbooks.com. You'll see the link there. It's on iTunes. It's totally free. Add it to your feed with NSFW show, along with Frame Rate and, your regularly updated Weird Things podcast now. And, enjoy. Justin does a fantastic job. I write some of these stories with the idea that Justin will be the one reading them, which adds a fun dimension to them. So that's the Andrew Main Stories Podcast.
Yeah.
All right.
Boys and girls. It's been weird.
You want to sponsor the podcast? Do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor, and you can have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.